This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
Her and I both did the goals together on the plane like the year before. And we both looked at them and I hadn't even looked at them all year, to be honest. I was pretty bad about it. And then I looked at them and I was like, holy shit, my visualization and my goals from January 2019, the year before, is like, I'm going to wake up in my apartment next to Central Park and Mickey, my dog, and I, we're going to be walking and I'm going to respond to emails whenever I want. I'm going to do whatever I want and I'm going to be traveling everywhere and I'm going to make this amount of money. And I was like, damn, I'm like, I actually do that every day.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. This episode is sponsored by Infinite Road Destinations, the smartest short-term rental property management group I know, and the group that manages my properties. This is a company that's very close to my heart, run by two of the smartest, most attentive people I know, Claire Rosenberg and Alex Brashears. Claire and I first met when we worked together at NetApp, where she was a top performer and rose crazy fast in the company. And Alex is just one of the most active, genuine people I know in the real estate space. The two of them together bring a blended background of project management, software design, and extensive experience with automation tools and virtual assistants. Through these experiences, they optimize any property to deliver a hands-off experience to owners while delivering the highest occupancy and highest daily rates possible. You guys know I would not recommend anything to anyone in this group that I do not fully endorse or think that is the absolute best product. And this company is that. And like I said before, this is the exact company and people that manage my Airbnbs. If you don't believe me, here are a few of the other tools and services that come along with the team: listing optimization, guest support and approval, communication and reservations, key exchange and management, dynamic pricing, welcome kit creation, listing advertising and marketing, vendor management, including cleaners, maintenance, handyman, runners, and monthly property reports. To learn more, check out shorttermmadeeasy.com or email info@shorttermmadeeasy.com. And on the form, just mention that you heard it here or mention my name. So give it a try. You have nothing to lose and they offer a satisfaction guarantee. And I assure you guys, you will not be disappointed. What's up, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with friend and financial influencer, marketing specialist, Leanna Hawkins. She is based in New York City and helps businesses, specifically in the financial world, grow on social media. She also helps educate people on personal finances, business finances. She's an author, best-selling book called Young, Fun, and Financially Free, and just really has a great kind of outlook on business and finance and helping people. And as you can tell, we just had some fun on the show today going through kind of a lot of, I'd say, topics around how to invest money at like an early age, but also maybe mistakes people make and things they could be doing kind of as they start scaling a business or investing into their kind of later years, and how she thinks about those type of, I guess, challenges or also just differences from like when you're starting out, but also when you're a little bit older in the space and kind of navigating that. The main learning I had from this episode was actually kind of a business skill conversation we were having around following up. Leanna has done a lot in a short period of time, and especially in a world that we kind of talk about on the show being sort of like male dominated in the sense of just real estate and finance a lot of times, but she's carved out an awesome niche, but she's done it through gritty perseverance and getting in front of a lot of people and making just great relationships and following up with people. And one of the topics that we talked about a lot was following up with people and doing it in a way that wasn't annoying. And that kind of gets to a tangible tip that I took away from the show, was that she writes down one personal thing for each person for the follow-up. So she'll follow up with someone she meets at an event And the first line or subject line will always be something that she connected with them on a personal level with. And she will jot that down on a card or on her notes app in her phone right after that conversation. And it almost always ensures that she has a warm kind of follow-up with that person. And that it's not just straight into an ask that she needs from them. So it's a good reminder. It's one that's like easy to do, easy not to do. But she just said it's been kind of her key to networking and following up with people in a way that's not annoying or kind of in a disarming way. So really good stuff there. I think you guys will enjoy this one with Leanna Hawkins. Leanna, what is going on? Welcome back to the podcast. So good to see you. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah. Thanks for having me back on. New York is definitely picking up. There are so many people moving back, particularly in the West Village and downtown. There's lots of young people moving into the city. I'm not even kidding you. The street is like a party on the weekend there now. So it's definitely getting busy again. I'm noticing lots of, people in their 20s, everyone, I'm in my 30s. So everyone in the city in their 30s and 40s is like, okay, the world is being taken over by young people. So a lot of people that actually could not afford to live in Manhattan, especially in Manhattan or Brooklyn, before COVID, now rents are down like 30% from last year. I've negotiated my rent down that much. So there's a lot of young people moving into the city that couldn't have otherwise afforded it. So that's good for them. And it's interesting to see.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it makes me think of two things. One, did you see that article that everyone's talking about in New York about what young people are doing this summer? And what?
No. I don't know how I did it, but you'll
basically have to say it's basically saying, and this is not this type of show, but it's basically saying that now everyone in their 20s or 20s and 30s, but like young people in general in New York are just going to be going crazy this summer. Oh, yeah. And they said there's going to just be a lot of activity going on. So, but you stayed the whole time during COVID, right? So like, do you resent these people that are coming back now, or, you know, whatever?
Kind of. I mean, to be honest, yes.
They failed.
Just kidding. I mean, I spent time out on Long Island. Like, I took my dog to Montauk, to the beach, to the beach in Connecticut. We did road trips. And I did a few trips, like weekend trips on flights on my own. But I mean, whatever, I think it's great. I think it is a really good opportunity for people that maybe couldn't have afforded a Manhattan rent, before COVID to get into the city. Like not everyone, but like a lot of young people want that experience of a year or two living in Manhattan in their 20s and 30s. And that was sort of my mentality before I moved here in 2019. Mm-hmm. And that I always said, like, before 35, I have 2 years of Manhattan in me. And so I'm doing that now. And good for them. And I think that by the time fall comes around, I've heard from most people that I know that work here in the city, their offices are mandating them to come back to the office, some with vaccines as a mandatory requirement, some not with, with vaccines yet, by right after Labor Day. So I think that in the fall, there's gonna be a lot of job opportunity for young people coming back to work. And it's going to look a whole lot different. Like, I was really much more pessimistic of a 3 to 5 year turnaround for New York City, but I already see new restaurants and new real estate developments popping up in places that went under last year. So it's turning around pretty quick. People are taking up the opportunity on residential and commercial real estate here. I can already see it just walking down the street.
So true. A lot I could say in that, but I don't want us to get too far from you. So you mentioned you moved to New York and you were giving yourself a 2 year window. Can you just give us a quick blurb? This is your second time in the show, so we'll link the episode that you were on before, Leanna, but from a very high level, can you just link or not link? Can you talk a little bit about your background, what got you to New York, and kind of what you do if someone hadn't heard that first episode, and kind of what you do today?
Yeah. So I'm Canadian by birth, grew up in Vancouver, Canada, West Coast, which is still the best coast. Just kidding. I don't know. Now I'm 50-50, but I love Vancouver. I love California. Lots of time, both those places. Went to school in Toronto for finance and business. And since my third year in college was the first year I actually got an office job doing investor relations in the stock market for public companies. And since then I've been working with public companies, private funds, all within the financial space, hedge funds, private equity, venture capitalism, real estate funds, in London, France, Toronto, New York, LA, Chicago. So my clients, and I've lived in 4 different countries in my 20s, and filed corporate and personal taxes in many places. And it's a big nightmare now at this point, because I still have to do filings everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's a nightmare. But it's been worth it. I've had lots of great experience. And a few years ago, I was 29 and had kind of been working in this, you know, hard and fast world of the boys club and finance and the wining and dining of the hedge fund industry and that type of thing, all over the place. And I just felt like I wanted to do something more on an educational level, like some sort of give back to the world. A lot of people that work in finance get to that point at some stage. For some people, it's later in life, in the end of their 30s and their 40s, and they turn around and leave finance and do something as a nonprofit. A lot of us in this industry do go through that, because sometimes the thought process for me anyway was, am I just moving money around and making rich people richer, or what am I actually contributing to the world? And so I decided to write this book called Young, Fun, and Financially Free. All the proceeds go to the WE Foundation, which builds villages and communities in third world countries. Mm. And one of the pillars of the organization is opportunities. So they need to make sure that the people have income sustainability and the village is economically sustainable once they leave the village, primarily in Kenya. So that's where the money of the book goes to. It's on Amazon. It's a bestseller. So everyone should check that out. It's an easy 3 to 5 hour read of like everything you need to know about money. Like, I even talk about my first real estate venture, which has made me more money than anything in the stock market so far in my last like 13 years of investing, and mortgage broker, how I went through that process working with her. And then, you know, stocks, saving, spending, how to get deals on pretty much everything, side hustles. There's a little bit of everything. So it really is more of an adulting 101 book, I like to say. And so that was about 3 years ago. Since then, I've sort of built up this social media audience and done a lot more on television, CNBC, Bloomberg, all the major networks, talking about money and investing and real estate and all this different stuff that millennials are typically interested in, who kind of want to live what I say the wealthy life, W-E-L-L, because I'm very much like health and wellness based. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I still have that, the West Coast vibe with the East Coast hustle. So that's, that's my background. And I ended up, because of all those things and looking for sort of a fresh start in life after a really, really difficult, challenging year in Vancouver a few years ago, my long-term significant other passed away very suddenly, and I wanted to have a fresh start in New York and have that 2 years in Manhattan I always talked about. So I moved to New York, and you know, we had COVID 8 months later, so just working through that working through that challenge. But but it's been a really, really great move. I love the city. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, like we were saying, I think it's going to turn around faster than any of us had anticipated. So
that's, one thing,
that's my last 20 years.
One thing that I feel like with young people who want to get into like investing money, even like more serious like life planning, is they don't really get what they want because they aren't sure what they want, or they never make a plan. So I'd love to hear, for you, can you talk about maybe like if it was maybe early on after college, or kind of even later in your 20s or 30s, when you started getting more serious about your plan? Because I really do believe most people can achieve whatever plan they set, even if it's a big plan. But most people, I think, would want modest ones, but they don't do it because there is no plan. They're just kind of going with the flow of go to school, get a job, put money in retirement accounts, and then one day in 40 or 50 years, you'll be able to quote unquote retire. Mm-hmm. But I think if people had a plan, so can you maybe just talk us through kind of your thought process on like life planning, financial planning? When did that happen? And then like, has it kind of gone to plan, or have you made changes from whatever your original plan was?
Yeah. I mean, definitely nothing has gone to plan. I don't think anything goes to plan for anyone. That being said, that doesn't mean it's not important to have ambitions and plans and goals, because even if you're planning for, you know, I honestly, in my 20s, people in job interviews and stuff would always ask me like, what's your 5 to 10 year plan? And I would just say, like, if they ask me directly about money, I would say more. If they ask me about goals, I would say bigger. And I didn't really do that well on like a 5 to 10 year scale, because I knew, okay, I'm 22 years old. I just got out of school. Like, I'm going to be, I used to make a joke sometimes, like I'll be the president of the United States in 15 years. And then it obviously makes people laugh because I'm a Canadian. I'm not even allowed to vote in America yet. I'm still only on, you know, visas and stuff. So with my company, which is my own company. But yeah, so that would always be my joke because I'll be the president of the United States. I wasn't even born in the US and I'm a woman. So that would be, you know, novel. But
many firsts.
A Canadian woman. Yeah, it would be very novel for me to win the presidency. Mm-hmm. But on a shorter term basis, I definitely do 1 year plans, sometimes 2 year plans and 2 year goals. I write them down at the beginning of the year or whenever throughout the year. I think last year, because obviously things change so much in the middle of the year, I had to go from, you know, writing down my goals. I write usually a goal in every area of my life, like a health and wellness one, a savings one, an investing one, a personal life, love life, family life one. And I make goals in these different areas. I physically write them down on a sheet of paper and I give them milestones in terms of like measurable things that I can look at doing throughout the year. So like stepping stones throughout the 12 months to sort of get to that goal by the end of the year. And then I usually do a reassessment of them. So I'll go back to that journal and look at them as often as possible, but I'll do this reassessment in June, July, August, depending on how the year's going. So like I say, last year, obviously, you know, my income goal was like twice what it was the year before, because I was like, okay, now I'm in New York and our clients are going to be bigger and everything's going to be bigger and better. And I had to make a hard reassessment in June. I've never actually had to do it so drastically as I did last year. But a lot of my young entrepreneur friends had to do that last summer. And like, you know, people that are really motivated like you and I, and take a look at those goals, and maybe that year-end income goal is not going to be as achievable literally from things completely out of our control. Mm-hmm. So, but then you can also look at the health and wellness goals and your family and relationship goals and strengthening those, and, you know, maybe put more emphasis on those things if you're having a bad business year that's completely out of your control and things like that. So I definitely believe in measurable 1 year to 2 year goals in mm-hmm. every area of your life, because you don't want to, you know, put too much focus on money, because it's not, money is not about the money itself. It's just a tool to give you freedom and time for all those other things. So you want to make sure you're focusing your efforts in different areas of your life, but write them down, write milestones and things that you can do throughout the year. And if you've done them, and also when you write that at the beginning of the year, whenever you decide to do these goals, you know, later is better than never if you didn't get to it in the first quarter of the year, write down things that you're going to do, those milestones, and put them into your calendar on your phone right away. Put them into your calendar on your computer. Like by May 31st, I will have contacted 10 new leads for deals, or I will have applied to 15 different jobs in real estate financing, or, you know, wherever you're looking at getting a job, if that's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Put something in your calendar on your phone or your computer so that you're reminded of these milestones, like, you know, at least 2, 3, 4 of them throughout the year. And that will help you naturally get to your goal, whether you're looking at that journal or that page every day or every week or every month or not. If you already have reminders in your calendar from the beginning of the year, it's going to be a lot easier to get there.
Totally. The worst thing I think people can do is make a goal and just lose sight of it without putting it on your calendar, understanding the tactics, and then having accountability and even making it painful or like fun to hit. There's just almost no point, because you do the hardest part, but then you're not executing. So
long-term, it's been all over the place. I'll tell you that right now. Like I never would have thought I would live in all these different places or like work with the people I've worked with. My 2019 claim to fame is Mark Cuban sliding into my DMs about my book. So cheers to me on that. There's lots of people and things that have happened and people that I've met and like billionaires and like cool shit. But, you know, I think those things happen along the way of going for something hard. Like if I didn't have goals, if I didn't have a really, really big vision of just... Visualization is really important too. I think what I do every year is I write those goals, but I also write a full page or 2 pages, however long it takes, of a day in my dream life next year. So me waking up and like literally writing it out. I woke up this morning and I looked out the window to my beautiful view of Central Park. I'm planning for my trip to my home on the beach next month and taking my dog Mickey and blah, 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 like literally writing it all out. And then I go over to my desk, check my emails, and make my for Sigmatic coffee and blah, 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 you know, like literally visualize and write out what a day in your dream life in the next year or two would look like. And I swear it's freaky and it's weird, but like the last few years, like it actually has come to fruition.
Did you know that from Frank Kern? That's an exercise that we do now, but like I've never heard this guy, Frank Kern, I guess not, but like that was the most like powerful exercise I remember like I did around goal setting was like envisioning your perfect day. Cause I had trouble connecting with like 20 year goals, but I could come up with like, what would be an amazing day that you could just live every day. So that's really cool. Cause to your point, it seems like it kind of just happens.
I think that, well, I actually first started this a few years ago when my book first came out and I got into sort of the influencer space, which I say with air quotes, if people are listening to the pod, because I absolutely despise that word. And I think it's horrendous. And I think influencer means many different things. I'm more just like someone that is a finance person that talks rather than an influencer. A finance person that talks about it. A lot of people that work in finance are like all hush hush because it's supposed to be like a very exclusive and like secretive industry. Like we know more than you do and that's why we make so much money. Well, I mean, just cut the crap. I just like to talk about it and like help other people learn from some of us in the industry that might be successful with finances. And so anyway, I went to this mastermind retreat in Mexico with 6 or 7 other influencers. And these women were influencers in different areas of wellness. One was like a meditation expert. One was a mindfulness expert. And I'm telling you back then, like 3.5 years ago, I was very much like hot off the streets of working in the city in London. I was running my own company. I was traveling 2 weeks out of every month, going to all these like fancy schmancy things in finance and invitation only, blah, blah, blah. And I was not really that into like meditation, visualization and all the woo-woo things, which are so mainstream now, even for me, mindset, everything. It's so mainstream. I talk about it all the time. But yeah, when I really started implementing these things was in my late 20s and early 30s. And I went to this retreat and one of the girls was a manifestation expert. And she was the one that walked us through this day in the life visualization journaling exercise. Mm-hmm. And then there was another woman that walked us through how to create these goals. And actually, well, two guys and they're both friends, but Ed Milet and Tony Robbins both have a one singular episode on their podcast about how to set those goals and how to create measurable stepping stones throughout the year to them and how to add those to your calendar and stuff. So I actually, Ed Milet is one of my favorite ones, M-Y-L-E-T-T.
Yeah, he's amazing. We'll link that.
And yeah, so if anyone wants to look that up, just search under Apple Podcasts or whatever, Ed Milet goals podcast episode. It's a really good one that walks you through how to do that. And yeah, that's kind of how I learned at that retreat. I was definitely like the most straight-laced person there. And they were all teaching these like woo-woo techniques and journaling and visualization, meditation and yoga every morning. But I mean, it was life-changing. And in some ways it's very weird that on that retreat, all of us were in our 30s, early 30s, mm-hmm. mid-30s. Every single one of those women had their own goals personally, and all of them, maybe because they implement them even harder than I do, and they had been for years, all of them are literally exactly where they said they wanted to be. Like every single one of them during the COVID year either got engaged, married, had a baby, and they all like wanted that in their 30s, or you know, as many women do.
Sure.
And I was kind of shocked. I'm literally the only single person left of that whole group. So maybe I need to start meditating and manifesting harder on my personal life than my professional financial life. But yeah, I mean, like I have seen the results of that stuff in many people. So don't discount the woo-woo things. It's, you know, it's not all about the money. It's about the mind too. Very much so. Very powerful.
Yeah, it's tough because I think a lot of it is like hidden behind a lot of woo-woo stuff, but there's a lot of good concepts in there. And like the concept I think about with it is, like to be successful, you don't have to do like a ton of things, but why not just do the things that are like kind of habits of successful people? Like if you see all the things about CEOs that read a lot. So like, if you just do one of those habits, there's a good chance that you will then start to have those type of results. Like just the more habits that you do of successful people, you'll probably become successful. Like it just,
It's the same thing. Like if you want to be unsuccessful, eat a McDonald's every day and just never work out and not read, like the opposite. So that is cool though, but it is funny how we make our plans. And then I think the goals still come a lot of times, but the way that we get there is almost never the same that we think it is.
Yeah. And sometimes it's delayed. Like, you know, I think there was ones that I did, the ones I did January 2 years ago. And then I looked at the beginning of last year. So right before COVID, those ones, I was shocked because I actually did them on a work trip on a plane in January 2019. And by the end of 2019, I was on another work trip with the same crew, the same client group. And I was talking to like one of the girls that's similar age to me that works for them, that's always on the trips as well to go to these conferences. And her and I both did the goals together on the plane like the year before. And we both looked at them, and I hadn't even looked at them all year, to be honest. I was pretty bad about it. I was busy moving from Canada to the US and immigration and all that. And then I looked at them and I was like, holy shit, because it is weird, especially when you have a big move like that, like moving to a totally different place. And my visualization and my goals from January 2019, the year before, is like, I'm going to wake up in my apartment next to Central Park, and Mickey, my dog, and I, yeah, we're going to be walking, and I'm going to respond to emails whenever I want. I'm going to do whatever I want, and I'm going to be traveling everywhere, and I'm going to make this amount of money. And I was like, damn, I'm like, I actually do that every day. And it was weird because back at that point, like I didn't even know if I was going to get my US immigration for the business. I didn't know if any of that was going to happen, but I guess I manifested hard on it. And it's not just that. I think some people, the reason why I discounted these woo-woo techniques at the beginning was because I saw all these people on Instagram. They're still there. There are a lot of men and women in those types of fields that are experts, and I don't discount them, but a lot of them put so much emphasis on the journaling and the manifesting and the visualizing itself, not the action that follows, that's when I'm kind of like, okay, you can't just put a hope and a wish and a dream on a cloud, send it away, and hope that the angels will fall for you. Like, you know, you have to do the work. And that's been my whole thing. And I think we talked about this on our first episode, is knocking on doors. You knock on doors, they will open. You follow up. I am the queen of polite persistence. I say that all the time. I literally just had a dinner. I got a last minute invitation to a dinner this Monday night. So 4 days ago. Here in Manhattan, and it was a CEO that had been out of the city for the last year, pretty much, in Connecticut with his family. His first time back in the city having a dinner. He messages me with half an hour notice and says, hey, Liana, I'm meeting up with 7 guys for dinner tonight. Totally last minute, all people in business development and marketing, which is what I do with hedge funds and stuff, and, you know, trying to get that ball rolling again. He's like, you know, definitely people you should meet, head of business development for this firm, CEO of this bank. Do you want to come for dinner? And I was literally sitting on my couch. It was Monday night. It was pouring rain. I had no makeup on. My hair was dirty. And I was like, and it was like 7 o'clock, and they were meeting at 7:30. Like, you know how it is on a Monday night. You're like so tired, and women have the added, you know, efforts of hair and makeup and all that. And I was like, oh, like last thing I felt like doing. But then I was like, literally, Liana, it's been pretty quiet for the last year. Get your ass off the couch and get to this dinner now. And I did it, and it was so worth it. Going to keep in touch with these people. But you have to put yourself out there to opportunities. Don't say no when a good door opens, and go for it. Like, you have to make the effort. And that's where I see a gap in a lot of these plans, whether it's goals and milestones, visualization, meditation, whatever you're doing to get to a wealthy life, a dream life, you know, a life better than the one you have now, is that there's a gap between the wishing, the wanting, and the thinking about it, and actually doing stuff to get there. Throughout my 20s and my early 30s, like, Mark Cuban didn't just slide into my DMs out of absolutely nowhere. I met him at a conference, a very exclusive conference. Wow. That I emailed the conference people for years and multiple times, 4 or 5 times, one spring before the event, to see if I could get an invitation. And they ended up giving me a free pass to a $10,000 invitation only event. So, wow. I mean, persistence pays off, and you really have to do those things, I think, to get yourself, like what you were saying, you have to take the actions every day. Like, don't, you know, most billionaires and millionaires don't eat McDonald's every day. They live a healthy lifestyle. They take care of their mind, their body. They do all the things. not just sitting watching the stock market or watching real estate deals. They do other things to better their life and keep their mindset and everything in good shape as well. But you have to take action. You have to put yourself out there and surround yourself with those people, whether it's, you know, the bigger podcast Facebook groups, be involved in those. If you're into real estate, put yourself out there for a mentorship and to mentor people younger than you, give back and the world will give to you. But yeah, you have to actually do the things to get there. I don't just show up at people's doorstep. I don't, you know, have coffee in the lobby of Goldman Sachs expecting for something to happen to me. I mean, you know, you got to get out there and contact people and make it happen. Get to know people and surround yourself, like that whole thing of you will likely end up being the culmination of the five people that you spend the most time with or that you speak to the most is absolutely true. I spend most of my time talking to guys in their 50s and 60s and sometimes in their 40s that are definitely all millionaires. And, you know, a lot of my young friends that are real hustlers too, that if they're not millionaires yet, they're going to be there. And I have zero doubt that they will. And those are the type of people that are hustling and really investing in themselves personally and in their relationships that you got to spend your time around.
So one thing that I see is kind of like done wrong sometimes, but obviously when it's done right, it can be such a, like a big lever to change networking, business opportunities, is follow-up, which you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips or examples in your life how you've been able to follow up pleasantly or persistently without being annoying? Because yeah, I think we've all like been on the receiving end of both, and we can appreciate either creative or like well done follow-up, but we can almost always think of annoying examples of like the wrong type of follow-up. So how do you think about following up in a way that doesn't annoy people and gets results you want?
So I'll say three things on that. There's, I would say number one, and actually this was even just reiterated to me last year, beginning of last year before COVID, my firm Blackhawk Financial, which as I kind of mentioned, we do like marketing and business development for funds and for fintech or just lots of different companies in the financial services space. And I was talking, I've been talking to a few different firms about becoming a broker dealer, which means that we can raise assets, manage assets, as well as doing marketing and all of that. And so I was talking to a few different firms about this and partnering with them. And one of the guys is probably like 69, like, you know, very senior in the industry. And he was saying to me his follow-up principles. And this guy is very, very well known in New York. And where I was talking about working with his firm or working with others potentially, and about how, you know, these client proposals are coming together. I've been in New York a while now, sending out proposals. And I was telling him how I am the queen of polite persistence and the follow-ups. And he's like, absolutely. And he's like, and I bet you know better than anyone else, you never send a follow-up on a Monday morning. And that's so true. And I've actually really, I think I probably knew that before he mentioned it last January, February. But when he said that, as a CEO who's like a senior guy, very old school mentality, you know, that could have changed maybe a little bit by now. But I absolutely think to be on the safe side, I always wait usually a minimum of a week to follow up with someone. I never do it on a Monday morning as much as I want to. Monday is my favorite day of the week. I am roaring and ready to go. I have a to-do list, a follow-up list in my Monday morning block, which I have since moved to, because you think about it over the weekend, right? You're kind of like, oh yeah, I got to follow up on that guy. I got to call that girl back, you know, see how they're doing with that thought or that idea we had to do business together or that deal. And I don't put it in like a calendar block on Monday morning anymore. I specifically only do it on Tuesday, even though I really want to follow up with them on Monday because I'm excited about it. I don't, because of what that guy said to me. Because people have their, especially when you're asking for an up, you're leveling up with that person. And they probably know it, you probably know it. You're asking for their time. Don't take Monday morning from them. Don't get in their inbox when their inbox is already full over the weekend. You're just gonna annoy them. And they're, you know, subconsciously, maybe even consciously in their mind, gonna think this little effer is bothering me. And you don't wanna be that person. So definitely keep the follow-ups for Tuesday to Thursday is what I say. Friday, you'll end up getting lost in the Monday morning shuffle also likely. So not a good tactic. And that's my number one. Number two, I would say every single conference. So a lot of, like I said, a lot of my industry is conferences, the boys club, the networking, the wining and dining. And I think in any industry, people should be doing that. Even if your industry is not naturally toward that, get in meetup groups, get on Facebook groups, go to in-person events. Meeting people in person is so powerful. I've missed that a lot over the last year. It's my bread and butter. And I think everyone should be doing that. Even though we're moving into this online world, in-person contacts, handing out a business card, your personal business card for real estate investing or whatever you're doing, get them printed, get them done. Mm. And I always take people's business cards. Like literally I could show you like a stack of business cards that I have in my desk that all the back of them have notes on them. So this is where personalization and really getting to know someone and connect with someone, where that comes down to it. So even let's say you are doing a Zoom event or you're in person, you're collecting business cards. If it's a Zoom event, write down the name of the people that are attending. Like look at the side list of people that are involved in the chat group, what they're saying. Say like, Jonathan Farber, millennial real estate investor, lives North Carolina plus Florida, likes Nike. Like, write a few things down. Wears glasses. Kid's name is Bobby. Bobby is going to the soccer tournament next weekend in Tennessee. I literally write that shit down on the back of business cards. Wife's name is Karen, pregnant with twins, due in September. Like, and I will, when I'm at an event, take that card, I walk around the corner, go to the ladies' room, and I'm in the bathroom before I forget. And I'm like writing on the business cards, like sitting there at the counter. And if I'm just too busy or whatever to like take a break for a moment and write on the business cards, whenever I get home from the dinner or the event, I always make sure in my hotel room, like even if it's 2 a.m, I will literally write on the back of business cards because I know that by the next day, I'll probably forget which one was Joel and which one was Jenny and who's having another kid soon or who's moving somewhere, you know? So it gives you personal points for years to come of how to follow up with those people. You know, you send them an email. The first email should always have something about like, nice to meet you, within 48 hours, send a nice to meet you email or a thank you email and say something personal, connect with this person, create a relationship with them. Don't just say, I hear it's raining in Miami. Too bad for you guys this week. Nice to meet you. Would love to talk to you again about doing business together or, you know, whatever you want to talk about. Say something personal. And that's why when you meet people, it's really important to listen more than you speak. Mm. Ask simple questions and listen to their responses, learn from them, calibrate that information, go around the corner, write a note about it on their business card or in your notebook if it's on Zoom, and always use that information. Personal connection is the most important thing in business. People aren't doing business with you just because you're the heaviest hitter in that industry. People do business with people who like other people. Like, you're not going to do business with someone you don't like. You're not going to do business with someone you don't connect with, whether this is in finance and real estate, any kind of business relationship, hiring situation, job situation. People do business with people they like. So
True. You
definitely get to know people. So no Monday emails, probably no Friday emails. Get to know someone personally. And then third, I always change the format of the follow-up. So sometimes I have to follow up with someone 4 or 5 times because people are really busy. People are much more important in their business than I am in their business. And so I would always change the email. I literally sent a 5th follow-up email to someone last Thursday. And I said, because I joke with people that I'm the queen of persistence and follow-ups. So they expect that it's coming and they know I'm not going to give up, and not in a rude way. They just know that I'm gritty and I hustle. So I actually sent a quote to a guy last Thursday on my 5th follow-up. I've been following up for like 2 months about a big, big opportunity for me. So it's very important to me that I follow up that many times. Normally most people don't get 5 follow-ups unless, you know, I really want something out of them. Let's be honest. So yep. I sent him, "Hey John, hope you're having another great week. I was looking on the internet today and found a few great quotes. Here's my favorite for this Thursday. The only difference between success and failure is a thin line of persistence. stay ahead of the line and success is coming your way." It was like some quote like that, but it was something about like the only line between success and failure is persistence. And then I sent that to him. He literally responded within 3 minutes and said, "Ha ha, Leanna, you're amazing. Love the quote. gave me an update on the situation and actually like finally responded to me. And he just said, he has COVID. He's been in bed with COVID for 2 weeks. And he's like, I'm not doing well, but hopefully I'll come around the corner next week. So again, people are busy. They have stuff going on. Understandable why this guy hadn't gotten back to me in like almost 4 weeks, because he was busy and then he got COVID. So, and he has COVID in bed, still emailing me back because I sent him something funny that was related to something we had already discussed. So always change the format. Don't just make it so stale. Don't just say, hey, John, wanted to follow up with you on that situation. Let me know. Thanks. Say, hey, John, hope the kids are doing well. Hope Bobby won his tournament. How are you doing this week? Wanted to, and then next paragraph, hoping to follow up with you shortly on XYZ, period. Many thanks, you know. So show gratitude for their time. Switch up the format of the emails. Try to give something of value in the email, even if it's just a joke or remembering something about them personally, following up with something in their personal life or a deal that they mentioned they were working on. Show interest in them as a person and build a relationship along the way of following up. Don't ever just say, hey, John, hey, whoever, wanted to follow up on this. Like, you know, don't just go straight in for like, this is what I need from you. You know,
never rubs people the right way. Yeah, there's so much good there. That's just like so tactical for people. Like, people are busy. So just staying in front of them in a gentle way. Like, we get pinged on stuff all the time. And I don't take it personally when people follow up. I actually respect it more. It doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to answer that message every time. I try to, but like, if they follow up on the fifth time, it's just more of like a reminder to me, like, oh, I still owe this person something, instead of, oh, this person's annoying me. So I just, that's such a clear point, Liana.
Even on social, if it's someone that like sends you a DM that's like, hey, I saw your post yesterday on dividends. Like, I love learning about that. Thanks so much. Hey, would you mind explaining to me why XYZ happens when the stock market, like whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like just recognition of something, or like, you know, don't just go straight in for what you need, because anything you can do to differentiate yourself or add value to them, remember something about them, build the relationship, is only going to make them want to help you and then respond to you more.
Totally. And one thing just now, because we're only a couple minutes left here, but one thing that you said earlier that I think made a lot of sense, and even like in talking about adding value as you're following up, and also like what you're doing on social media, if someone is supporting you on social media, or like if there's someone that you're trying to get in touch with, like another little hack is almost like start sharing their content, start putting them on your story, start like commenting, liking their stuff. Like that's another way to like subtly stay top of mind with them so that you don't have to keep sending the message. And to your point, I'd love to hear your comment on this. People will do stuff for people that support them and help them, you know, like everyone's looking for more help, like growing their brand. So like, just take that as, okay, as you're following up with someone, then just try to support them in other ways and see if you can add value in other ways. And you'll be surprised how much more often than they think of you.
Absolutely. That's actually one point. So in terms of following up as well, if you, a lot of time I meet people, most of us do, and you're like, I really like this person. They're really successful. They're great. I mean, I have no idea how I would work with them or like how we can serve each other right now, like financially or business-wise, but I know that in the future, there might be something here. I just like this person. Again, people want to work with people they like. People want to work with people they admire. So when you're sending a follow-up email, if there's, you didn't really discuss anything directly or whatever, but you just know you want to stay in touch, say to them in the end of the email, please let me know if there's any way I can be of help to you and your business. Would love to stay in touch, or please stay in touch. Ask them, tell them you want to help them. And again, that's, even if you don't know how you can provide value, that happens to me all the time, like legitimately emailing like billionaires and stuff. Like, please let me know if there's anything I can do to help. There's probably not. They probably have someone on their register, on their roster that does everything that I do. They probably don't need me, but offering shows that I'm willing to do the work to help them and build this new relationship. And they might think of me for something one day. So I always offer to help people in any way you can, even if you're not at all specific about how you can do that. Don't say, I don't know how I can help you. I mean, usually that's what I'm thinking. I have no idea how I can help this person. But always offer because they might think of something. And that's actually, that's usually how I get most of my clients. People will say, Leanna, you guys would be great at doing this for us. And that's why I have so many different types of clients. People are like, at this dinner on Monday, like someone looks at my business card and it kind of says a bunch of different things that we do. And they're like, so you kind of do everything. And I always joke, I'm always like, well, people tell me I would be good at something and they say they'll pay me and I never say no. So
Leanna, what's the best way for people to check you out? Follow you on social media, get in touch.
Yeah. So my Instagram is Leanna, L-E-A-N-N-A underscore Hawk, H-A-W-K, like my name, Leanna Hawkins, and BlackRock Financial, which is the name of my company. And yeah, that's my biggest community there. The book is called Young, Fun, and Financially Free, and it is on Amazon.
Leanna, always so fun catching up. We got to do some more continual live content. And
I know. Honestly, I love having conversations with you. I could do it all the time. So let's do
this. This always flies. Seriously, it goes so quick every time. I feel like there's always more to talk about. So seriously, enjoy spring in New York and just go easy on the people that have hibernated and now they're back. And it's just great catching up. So seriously, like, keep doing what you're doing and I'll be looking out. I always love the stuff you're posting lately. Your memes are hilarious, by the way. I need to say, I need to comment on your memes. Your memes crack me up and I share them out a lot. And I always send them to our content creator. I'm like, we need to be doing more of this. So just know people are watching. Okay.
Thank you. Well, I actually like the name of my book, Young, Fun, and Financially Free. I totally like, that's the whole premise of the book. It's very conversational and yeah, my content on social media, I don't take myself seriously. Like I slap myself in the face for dumb things I say and do all the time because I don't care. I mean, we all have slightly different personalities in different situations. Like I say, when I'm in these financial conferences, events, dinners, whatever, I definitely am myself to a T, but I think people sometimes in that environment would be surprised to go on my Instagram and see what I post on there because it's a very different approach. But I think with a soft approach to investing, finance, stocks, real estate investing even, because that's also intimidating. I think you get a lot more engagement from people and learning. It's easier to learn anything when you're having fun doing it. So that's my approach to education on social media and with the book. The book is very quick wit and stuff as well. So
love
it's an easy read. It's a good gift for someone too, if you want to get a younger person maybe to start learning.
Love it. Leanna, thank you so much for coming on and best of luck rest of this year and talk to you soon.
Thanks, John.
All right. See you later.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.